The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Ah, listeners, here we are, tidying up after another exciting season, filing away all this year's awards with the others, taking out John's empties to the recycling. Oh, what's this? Oh, it's Barry's Why This Will Be Aston Villa's Year wall chart. Still a little bit of work to do, of course, and we'll be applying ourselves to that in a very real sense today, discussing staying up Sunday, who's going to take the big drop, Hull or Newcastle, and taking a look at what's happening elsewhere, like in Italy, where they've had a match-fixing scandal. No, really they have. And a Coppa Italia final, the one where Juve beat Lazio, not the one where the lesbians refused to play. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Yeah, that's a proper news story. Sorry, that's an ironic reference to Felice Belloli, I think his name is, who's the president of the Italian amateur leagues.
Did he say that all female footballers were lesbians?
Well, no, basically they were having the budget meeting for all the different federations, and somebody raised the budget request for the women's football, and he said, we can't keep on giving money to these four lesbians,
Jesus
this bunch
Christ.
Of lesbians, basically. In Italian, if you say these questi quattro lesbiche or questi quattro gatti, it means, oh, this bunch of. Yeah.
Wow.
So they said, you know what, we're not even going to turn up for our Coppa Italia final. And all credit to them, they massive support as well. The president of the Italian Federation, Tavecchio, who's not exactly the cleanest of characters himself, or not unknown to ill-advised declarations himself, Opti Pogba, he's basically pressuring the guy to resign, which he's so far resisting. He says, I didn't make those. You can't prove I made those remarks. But Francesco Totti, amongst those leading calls for him to get out, he says, football belongs to everybody.
Good for him.
Well, it's been a heartwarming week of news in Italy, but we'll be coming on to that later on. First, let's say hello to Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Hello to Barry Glendening.
Hello.
And many hellos to Simon Burnton as well.
Hi.
With your promoted Watford.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, promoted.
All right.
Yeah, exciting times.
They certainly are. And they're exciting times for you too, Barry, because they did it. Sunderland are staying in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I said a few weeks ago I didn't care.
No, whether you said they were going down. That's what you said.
Yeah, and that I didn't care.
Oh.
And then I realised about halfway through the first half of their match against Arsenal that I really did care. And I'm absolutely thrilled to bits that they're staying up. And I was very proud of their performance against Arsenal. Back to the wall stuff. They had their chances, but, you know, Arsenal did dominate. And the defensive effort was fantastic to play like that away from home in the Emirates. And Kostel Pantilimon was brilliant. John Shea is brilliant. Sebastian Coates won 100% of his headers, won 100% of his tackles. You just can't do better than that.
Michael Cox with the tweet of the evening saying, not the first time that Wenger's been frustrated by his quotas.
Hey.
Is it written down? Anyway, his third straight goalless draw at home for Arsenal.
That's kind of worrying.
No, sorry, for third straight goalless performance for Arsenal. That's the first time that's happened since February 2009. Yeah.
Yeah, it's worrying with an FA Cup final on the horizon. I mean, they had plenty of chances to score. And normally you would have expected them to I think it's more a concern. It would be more of a concern if they weren't creating chances. But they are, so I wouldn't get too upset about it if I was an Arsenal.
Had the best chances, probably. The best two or three best chances of the game were all Sunderland's.
Mm.
But clinical finishing hasn't really been the hallmark of their season. Weirdly, I was just looking at the stats. Sunderland's 17 draws this season, 9 of them scoreless.
Mm-hmm.
But they've lost the exact same number of games as Southampton and Swansea, 17 each.
It's a thin line, isn't it?
So, you know, everyone's been raving about how great Southampton and Swansea were.
Mm.
And
are you seriously saying this, Barry?
I am seriously saying. I'm not saying Sunderland are fantastic. I'm just saying that, you know, they're probably not as bad as I perhaps at times was making them out to be. They have been quite solid defensively, apart from that time they lost 8-0 at St Mary's.
All right, Dick Advocaat in tears.
Yeah, for the first time ever, apparently, in public on the back of a football game.
Huh.
It's probably the kind of thing a wildly unexpected £500,000 bonus will do to a man.
He was emotional, and his compatriot Louis van Gaal was tired and emotional.
He certainly was.
Lots of emotional Dutchmen in English football this week.
Well, as you say, 17 draws, 9 of them goalless. Jonathan Wilson tweeting about how excited he was about that, and he feels privileged to have seen 3 of those goalless draws live. He's hoping now that they can get 18th draw number 18, which would be a Premier League record the weekend. They're going to be at Chelsea. He's also hoping that Lee Catamol, will get a booking, because that would take him to a record 15 for the season.
There's everything to play for.
It certainly is. This game, Chelsea-Sunderland, coming up at the weekend, this was a fixture that Sunderland won last season as part of their incredibly great escape. This time around, they'll be facing a Chelsea side, of course, with no Cesc Fabregas after Chelsea's 3-0 defeat away at the Hawthorns on, what was that, Monday, which saw Cesc picking up a red card for...
Yeah, for it was
cheeky chip
remarkable.
Of the ball into the crowd of players and referee.
Well, if Brunt hadn't been standing precisely where he was, the ball was on its way to the referee's head, wasn't it?
That would have been one of the greatest moments in football history.
Fabregas hitting the referee in the head with the football. I mean, it was funny as it was. It was pretty good. But had he hit the referee, that would have been amazing.
Right. Anyway, that was a 3-0 defeat, and the ban's now been reduced from 3 games, disappointingly, to just 1, which kind of takes half the fun.
Oh, that is disappointing.
Yeah. Jose Mourinho afterwards saying that the defeat was fairly and squarely the fault of Man United, City, Arsenal and Liverpool for not giving Chelsea any motivation to play in the final rounds. I have to say, I'm not always a fan, but that is magnificent.
Yeah, there's literally no situation he can't make antagonising, is there? No, they've pretty much clocked off. I was always quite confident that Sunderland would get something on Sunday, not least because they have an astonishing record against Chelsea.
Do they?
They always seem to get results against Chelsea.
Of numbers are we talking about, Ian?
Oh, probably loads. Right. I haven't got them to hand right now, but last season I think they won at Stamford Bridge, didn't they? There was, of course, a couple of years ago when Nader Manua tore through Chelsea's defence to score. They seem to have some kind of...
They did need a Manua after...
some kind of Indian sign over them, and Manchester City on New Year's Day, where they always seem to do very well as well. But just to go back to Sunderland briefly, it is worth saying that some credit goes to Lee Congerton, who in his choice of Dick Advocaat, I think everyone thought that was a Hail Mary pass. You know, just Christ, bring someone in who can do the job. But it's actually worked very, very well. It's not so much that Sunderland have been particularly good in any of the games, but they've just been more solid and more driven and more cohesive and just more like a team. And they've been playing 3 strikers as well, even if, you know, Defoe's been this sort of kind of defensive winger type position and then moving up. So
to describe yesterday's formation as 3 strikers is...
Yes. There were 3 strikers on the pitch. Whether they're centre forwards is another matter entirely. But Advocaat and Congerton deserve an awful lot of credit. What they have to do now is find a way of moving forward where everybody actually agrees with each other, because in the past few years they've had Poyet and Congerton not really on the same sheet for strategy. You've had Di Canio and Defanti as well. That everyone in that club needs to be going in the same direction, because they're too big and should be too good to be caught in this trap every single season.
Right. Well, they're no longer going in the direction mock championship. So well done to all concerned. Then unlikely to win, apparently, on the weekend, because Dick Advocaat's name doesn't begin with a P. It has been noted that all the managers who've beaten Mourinho this season have had surnames beginning with P. That's Pardew, Pochettino, Phil Parkinson of Bradford City, and Tony Pulis, his best chum. You see them hugging each other in the tunnel. There's a lot of love there. A lot of respect as well. If John Terry, who could easily have picked up a red card in Monday's game, but didn't, when conceding that penalty, if he plays the full 90 minutes on Sunday, he'll become the second outfield player ever to play every single minute of a season for the champions. The other one being Gary Pallister for Man United in 92-93, the inaugural season of football anywhere. Nice. Could be a big farewell to Petr Cech as well.
That's pretty much one in the eye for Rafael Benitez, isn't it? Who claimed that Terry wasn't fit to play 2 games a week.
Yeah, Terry's fourth-choice centre-back.
Just a massive up yours.
It certainly is, actually. It's hard to think of a more direct answer, you know, with the facts.
And he's had such a great season. I mean, he's been you know, a contender for Player of the Year. He should have been on the shortlist, I thought, but I probably...
Third for the Football Writers, I believe.
Okay.
Something for Rafa Benitez to consider as he takes up his new position at Real Madrid, which we'll be talking about later on, of course. Could be Petacek's last appearance at Stamford Bridge if he gets picked. But hey, let's move on to two games.
He'll probably appear there next season playing for Arsenal.
Ooh, that's true. Let's move on anyway to two games that matter and how. Hull against Man United and Newcastle West Ham after this. Okay, it all hinges on Hull against Man United. Hull have to win that. They have to win that. Man United have beaten Hull 3-0, 3-1 and 3-2 in their last three meetings. Steve Bruce has never beaten Man United as a manager, or I'm guessing as a player as well. But, of course, the Red Devils are completely loaded still from that incredible, incredible session they all had the other night.
That looked like the most fun ever.
What are we talking about, Ian?
Van Gaal.
Right.
Being a little tipsy. We can say a little tipsy. I think we can
fairly safe. He's notoriously fond of a drink. Mm. I mean, that's no secret.
There was a brilliant moment in his introductory press conference at Manchester United where he said that he and Sir Alex Ferguson had put the lights out many times, which I didn't realise is a Dutch saying for basically getting drunk until all the lights in the bar are turned out. And in my experience, they let the Rottweilers out into the pub and hope that you'll leave.
Don't they turn the lights on first? Oh, it's probably way past that. They put them on and then they turn them out
again. That didn't work. Now they turn them off and plunge them into darkness.
Right.
Now finally you got the Rottweilers out and eventually Van Gaal and Ferguson leave.
My word. Mm. Now, opinion did seem to be a little bit divided. The majority of people thought this was terrific fun from the Man United manager, letting his splendidly coiffed hair down a little bit and slapping Rijks around a bit. And others felt that he looked a bit boorish, basically, Simon. Where did you stand?
I'm all for people having fun. I mean, why not on an occasional basis?
Okay.
And he looks a bit odd anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know why. You can't judge that man on his looks.
Right.
And he is a boorish character and sort of... Booze tends to exaggerate those traits in a man. I think you'd have to be pretty petty to begrudge him a night's fun at an end-of-season awards bash.
And we're talking about a very experienced manager at Manchester United. There might have been people who thought, oh, is this one last payday? Is his heart really in it? I would say on evidence, yes, his heart is really in it. How can anyone be mean-spirited about someone who's clearly made such a connection with the club and the fans?
That's true. Anyway, he got so drunk that he slapped Ryan Giggs and launched a bid to sign Raheem Sterling. what did he think about that the next morning, I wonder?
Don't forget the saxophonists he also thanked. Because they do Sterling work in the band and never get the credit they deserve. So it was nice to see the horn tutor get her dues. Whoever she was.
Yeah.
And, whether or not he will attempt to sign Raheem Sterling remains to be seen.
We're going to have a special Raheem Sterling section later on.
Oh, God.
Yep. When we'll decide if he's a...
He's going to Arsenal.
...greedy upstart or just an upstart that's greedy. That'll be our big Football Weekly question. You can phone in, listeners. No De Gea in this game. Valdez will be taking his place, I imagine. Ian, you were confident that Hull were going to have a great season. The prospects aren't good at this point.
No.
What's going to happen on Sunday?
I don't think Hull will win. I really don't. In fact, I could see it being one of those days where you're all excited and then Manchester United score in 3 minutes and basically all excitement from the day is removed instantly.
All right.
They were better at Tottenham. There's no doubt about that. They still lost, though. But what really worries me was I was up there for Hull-Burnley, and it didn't feel like it was a crucial game. The players didn't seem to know it was a crucial game. The fans weren't, you know, as electric as you might expect them. They looked like a team sliding down without too much of a fight, which is a shame. And an awful lot of money's been spent there. I think $42 million in the summer.
Absolutely.
So it's not for want of resources, like, say, Burnley. And there are good performances in that team. Every now and then they do genuinely play well. But even with particularly lengthy hangovers, I still can't see them beating Manchester United.
Right, OK. Well, just saying they did win, you know, and stranger things have happened, just saying they did win, then Newcastle would need to win at home to West Ham. Let's have a toot on our Big Sam narrative klaxon. There you go. We've added Kevin Nolan, of course. There are members of the West Ham organisation who have something to play for and to push for in this game.
I think if Newcastle lose at home to West Ham, I think there's a good case for there being a special, extraordinary relegation space created for them. I mean, they've really played for it.
Like those Academy Awards, you know, in honour of a career.
Yeah, I think sometimes if there's a really extraordinary effort that has been put in with the aim of achieving something, I mean, they should get it. They should get their reward for this late season surge.
Don't imagine they're not up for this fight at Newcastle. Interesting talk from the training ground this week was that John Carver and Steve Stone had the players in for a special chat. And Steve Stone opened up a door and John Carver indicated it and said, you can walk through that if you don't fancy this scrap. And you know what? Not one person got up and left. So look out, West Ham.
They could well win. And you really can see halftime on Sunday, United leading at Hull, Newcastle leading, and it all being a bit of a letdown.
I don't think Newcastle are going to win that game. I think they're in absolute bloody shambles.
1 point from their last 30.
Do you think John Carver and Steve Stone sort of discussed and rehearsed that before the meeting?
I don't think something like that could have come about just, because, just by chance.
Because if John Carver suggested that and I was Steve Stone, I'd say, but boss, isn't there a really good chance that like 11 of them stand up and walk out that door? Everyone
expecting that dressing room to actually show the gumption to get
every
up and do something.
Every single person
like,
apart from Jack Colback and Jonas Gutierrez. But we've zoomed out down to the pub.
More likely, they'd all have stood up, walked into the door, and been ruled out for 3 weeks.
Intriguingly, word is that an Occupy St James's protest is planned for this game. I don't know what form that would take. What kind of occupation we're talking about?
Some kind of Blackpool related invasion of the pitch.
Oh yeah, maybe. Right. Toon, who's our very own tame Newcastle supporter, says, both the fact that Ashley could get away with it again and get bumper TV money next season is sickening. I genuinely, as a Newcastle fan, wouldn't care about going down. Interesting little window on the feeling there.
I'm going up to Newcastle on Saturday.
All right.
I expect to find that view to be pretty much unanimous. Mm. I mean, relegation would be ruinous, obviously. There's still some big contracts on there. And missing out on the TV money is very, very bad timing. But I don't think you'll find many Newcastle fans who would argue that it's anything but utterly deserved.
Right. It'd be worth it to be shot of certain people.
If they could get shot of Ashley. There's no guarantee that getting relegated will get rid of him. Maybe they can foist him off to somewhere else.
Right. Producer Ben just pointed out it didn't last time.
No.
No. Anyway, those are the two games there at the heart of the relegation battle. Let's have another little sting and then hit you with some Europa League clashes.
Guardian listeners get the latest news, but they can also create it. With our sponsor Squarespace, you can easily create an elegant website for your personal brand, online store, business, personal portfolio, or blog. Whoever you are, Squarespace's simple tools and elegant designs make your ideas newsworthy and accessible to any audience. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
One or two listeners unhappy that we seem to be poo-pooing or downplaying the importance or the attraction of the Europa League. Here's Duke de Blanges, for example, saying, I can't believe you guys have jumped on Harry Redknapp's anti-Europa League bandwagon.
I know
it is, and it just seems so attractive. Everyone else was doing it, so we piled on as well. Duke de Blanges says, what is the point in a football team? To win things, you can have a squad that is never tired if you never play a game, and so on and so forth. He or she adds, a European Cup sits in the club's trophy cabinet forever, and ninth place finish is pretty much forgotten as soon as the next season starts. It's a fair point, but Europa League is an inherently structurally fought. I think we're just reflecting the fact that clubs are not excited by the prospect of playing on Thursday.
You know, how many teams go into it? Only one can win it. Mm. And the process of not winning it is so arduous that when you weigh up the pros and cons, the cons win every time. Because, you know, it's not just the fact that you have your two games a week, Thursday, Sunday. Managers need time to prepare for games. And it's difficult to do that if you know, have these unwanted odysseys to faraway places.
Well,
that preclude training, preclude, you know, set piece sort of shenanigans on the training ground, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
It just makes life a lot more difficult.
Football games do that, no? And I think that's Duke de Plange's point. I must admit, I like the Europa League myself, but I do understand why a lot of teams are not keen. There's a couple of listeners with very clever suggestions for how to rectify the structural flaws. Calamity Jameson actually just basically retweeting what Gabriele Marcotti said. Move games to Tuesdays and Wednesdays and break teams into regional groups to reduce travel. Yeah, that would work. And Promising Light says, how about we introduce a law that any team in European competition is omitted from the League Cup that season? In theory, it would partially negate the fixture congestion argument, plus it would give smaller teams a better chance to win a trophy due to the absence of the usual suspects. This is an interesting thought, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it straight knockout seems the obvious solution.
Exactly.
Well,
I think the
English teams suffer a little bit more because the game is very fast, it's very physical, and you don't really get any gimmies in the Premier League where you do sometimes in say, Spanish football, where there are almost processions when big teams play small teams. And we've got this season, you only have to look at what Burnley did to Manchester City to see that you can't really take your foot off the gas at any point. And so, the English teams do feel it more. Ultimately, you're talking about the better part of 20 extra fixtures. That's almost a half a season to throw on.
If you get to the final, it's 19 games,
You can understand why they're not particularly enthusiastic about it. I'd be like Barry, I don't think it's a point like a secondary cup or a cup that doesn't mean anything. Obviously, it could be a good cup if it wasn't such a Pyrrhic victory, but I'll go knockout. Right. Make it fun.
I personally, that's fair. I personally would also say I would much rather see my club do well in the Europa League than the League Cup. I've never really understood the League Cup, but there you go.
Yeah, certainly it's a greater trophy to win. You're competing against more prestigious teams and teams that you don't normally face. But it's just this bloated league stage that needs to be dealt with, really.
OK, producer Ben wants to move on. So, some teams who may be playing in the Europa League next season include Liverpool, who are going to be at Stoke this weekend. They're currently fifth. They're a point ahead of Spurs, and they're at Stoke, which is the final game for beloved servant Raheem Sterling, who'll be making his farewell to the travelling supporters there. Where's he going to go? Barry, you were saying that you have the inside track on this, so where's he going to go?
Well, the inside track about 3 weeks ago, which gave a very, very good source, a relative of Raheem Sterling, is that he would be going to Arsenal and Theo Walcott would be going the other way.
Right.
But things change. Who knows?
Right.
Manchester City would seem to make an awful lot of sense.
Why is that?
Because it increases their homegrown player quota, which is a problem they're going to have, especially when they lose James Milner at the end of the season. They've also got loads and loads of money. And
they're now free to use it because...
Well, the FFP laws seem to be being relaxed, which strikes me as the thin end of the wedge. It starts with, you can have a bit of extra money to tide you over in difficult circumstances, and by the time the legal challenges get going, I'd imagine we'll be seeing far greater changes than that at some point in the future.
Right. Okay. Man United is the big story on Thursday morning and their bid for Raheem. Sarah Jones mentioning who was the last player was to go directly between Liverpool and Man United. Do you know who that is?
I read it this morning in the paper. I've forgotten his name.
Phil Chisnell.
Yes.
In far off 1964. Yeah. And they've just bought the Memphis Depay. So it does seem a strange move. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to my summer being enlivened by the ins and outs of that particular transfer.
Remember a few years ago, Liverpool tried to buy Gabriel Hines.
Oh, yeah.
And Ferguson was having none of it. Mm. It was just not going to happen.
The contract clause was for foreign clubs only. Oh, no. Upon this, it fell down.
All right. Well, PSG's another club that could wade in for Raheem. Anyway, Liverpool have this game at Stoke.
Isn't it widely recognised, though, that he wishes to return to London?
But it might be for those who have really good sources.
Well, I don't know. Hmm. But that, I thought that was part of the reason he's agitated.
Well, he mentioned him wanting to win titles and him being sick of being bullied by clubs offering him $100,000 a week.
Right.
Which is not to in any way belittle the emotional stress and pressure that they put him under. And I am in no way coming down on the Raheem Sterling's throwing his career and indeed life away, as Henri was suggesting on Wednesday night, because of bad advice. I think, you know, as others have pointed out, you know, footballers do this, and Liverpool were quite happy to pick him up when he decided that he was too big for QPR when he was 15. So
I think it's a mistake, but I think it's his mistake to make, and it will certainly be a most profitable mistake.
Why do you think it's a mistake?
Well, I think he'd be better off at Liverpool, where he's settled, where there's a chance they'll actually build a team around him, rather than going to, say, Manchester City or Chelsea or somewhere like that, where he might be on the fringes of the team, might not be getting the regular football, might not be in such a creative position. I know this wing-back thing keeps getting used, but it's really only sporadic occasions and usually in an emergency that he's been at a wing-back. So I think that's Bobbins. The protecting the club not protecting Sterling from headlines is Bobbins too, because those headlines have been caused by Sterling's camp. But he's perfectly entitled to consider this course of action. Liverpool are crap this season, so he's going to be looking around at that. He's also going to be remembering that Brendan Rodgers said he was the best young player in Europe.
Yeah.
The best young player in Europe doesn't sit there, quite possibly, if Liverpool drop to seventh, nervously watching the FA Cup final and hoping Arsenal win so that he can play Europa League football.
Mm. Interesting caveat, Ian, on that. Even if they were to finish, say, seventh and Villa won the FA Cup, Liverpool could still find themselves in the Europa League, lucky things, because they are top of the fair play table.
Ah.
Which you have to say is an outstanding performance by Brendan Rodgers' side. They are also top of another table. Do you know which one it is, Barry? I'll help you. It's the clean sheets table. Mignolet has had 13 clean sheets, the same number as Thibaut Courtois.
Good for him.
Mm. You were going to say something far more interesting.
No, I just thought Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher were talking about the Sterling situation on Monday Night Football, and Carragher, who I have to say I like, I have a lot of time for, but I thought he was a bit Victorian lady, you know, having a swooning fit when he said that the thought of Sterling, you know, taking on Liverpool, a 20-year-old taking on Liverpool over a contract, made him sick to the pit of his stomach. You know, it's just he's been in the game long enough to know what goes on, and I don't know if it was, that was just for effect or his genuine
part of
feeling.
The game, yeah. Mm. Well,
so the public nature's killed it for Sterling, and the way his agents dragged him through the back pages, that's what's really put the bad taste in everyone's mouth. But he's perfectly entitled to seek the best opportunities and the best money.
Mm.
And I think Liverpool kind of have to accept now that there's this top tier of clubs who come in for all the big names or the players du jour, and they're not one of them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think, you know, just last season they were a hair's breadth away from winning the league. They've had a bad season this year, but I think you need to have two consecutive bad seasons to be bad.
Well, they certainly have had those, haven't they?
Well, they have in the past,
yeah.
But if you're judging on the last two consecutive, like the last two seasons, then... well, maybe this one is the outlier, maybe last year's seasons was.
Right.
Have another season, then we'll know.
Or maybe one trophy in 9 years is the more compelling statistic.
That is a fairly compelling statistic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Everton are taking on Spurs in other exciting Europa League duel, or places in Europa League duel things. Final game, perhaps, for Hugo Lloris, they say, maybe. do you want to talk about that game? I mean, I'm sure it'll be a big game for fans of both sides, etc., as it will for fans of Manchester City when they take on Saints. Frank Lampard, who's still there apparently, he'll be waving bye-bye before he jets off to New York City. Hey, except, did you see that Paolo Maldini's bought himself an American club now? Or at least he's fronting up a...
Yeah, Miami FC.
Miami FC.
How many clubs can you fit in Miami? Because isn't that where Beckham...
Exactly.
He's basically... Paolo's gazumped Bex and got in ahead of him.
Yeah.
While Bex was dithering, Bex and his Bolivian backer were dithering over, you know, whether or not they'd be able to build a stadium in the part of Miami in which nobody wants them to build a stadium.
Mm.
Paolo and his money man have got in ahead of them, and they'll be playing in, is it Marlins?
Well, have they actually said which? They said one of the world-class stadiums in...
Yeah, but I think there is only one world-class stadium in Miami, and our Miami listenership are... perfectly welcome to A, correct me, and B, prove their point by flying me over to Miami and showing me all the top-class stadiums they have between trips to various pool parties and whatnot.
Right.
But yeah, so they'll be playing in the second tier of North American football. The thing, what with there being no relegation?
Yeah.
Are they doomed to play in the second tier forever?
Well, no, there is. I'm not by any means an expert on this or indeed any other aspect of this beautiful game. However, my research has indicated that there is a movement to introduce some form of relegation and promotion mechanism to these to the league structure, which sees at the moment MSL top and NASL. I don't know if there's a definite article with that. It might be the NASL in second place. There's also a suggestion that there might be some kind of merger between the Beckham and Maldini camps, because Beckham's group, as you say, has been left a little bit dead in the water by the fact that they haven't found a place to play, and their contract option is his option on having this
MLS franchise
is swiftly running out. But frankly, we don't know what we're talking about too much.
Well, we don't.
Let's move on then to Man City and Saints. Well, Frank Lampard's off. And a whole bunch of other people could be as well. Yaya, Dzeko, Milner, apparently. Southampton are on a bit of a roll after that 6-1 against Aston Villa. Sadio Mane, meh. So there's another exciting game. Ultimately quite meaningless, although potentially it might represent a place in the Europa League. Other games this weekend include Arsenal against West Brom. Berahino's hit 20 for the season. Will he still be there next season?
No.
Where will he be, Barry?
Manchester City or Liverpool.
Really?
Yeah.
What would he do at Manchester City?
Pardon?
What would he do at Manchester City?
Count his money.
All right.
And prepare.
Go on loan to Aston Villa, says producer Ben.
Prepare for a loan move to Aston Villa in 3 seasons' time.
Mm. That'll be an exciting way to finish the season then at the Emirates. West Brom unbeaten in 5, defeating Man United and Chelsea in that run. So tip of the hat to Tony Pulis. Villa are taking on Burnley. Of course, they got smashed by Southampton last weekend, and this could be a last... It's basically everyone saying goodbye, isn't it? Benteke could be the person waving goodbye in this one.
Real chance for Burnley to get a win on the board as well.
Do you think?
I would imagine, going on what we saw last weekend, that some of the Villa players have got one eye on Wembley.
Mm.
I don't think anyone's going to bust a gut 1 week before the cup final.
Right.
So, yeah, good chance for Burnley.
Crystal Palace are facing Swansea. And Leicester take on QPR, where Chris Ramsey has got the job permanently.
And a good move.
Yeah.
I think there's been noticeable improvement in the performances.
Really?
With QPR, if not the results. Results have gone very, very badly. But they seem more like a team now.
Simon?
A crap team.
Well, QPR, early season QPR, were a disgrace to their shirts. And they've certainly improved from there, certainly. And, you know, he comes across very well. So I'm certainly not going to criticise his appointment at this stage. Yeah, good luck to him.
Okay. Right. That was the Premier League weekend. Next up, Italy. Away in Europe, all sorts of excitement, says Michel Platini, goes on French radio and says, yeah, actually, we're going to be relaxing financial fair play. They brought it in 2011. They say that it has reduced net losses of Europe's clubs from 1.7 billion euros to just 400 million euros. So they're getting rid of it. Why? Well, Arsene Wenger said it's because all the English clubs are so rich now because the Premier League's deal is so much bigger than everybody else, it doesn't really work. And there's also the matter of all the court cases that are outstanding against UEFA over the financial fair play, which apparently they might want to just settle by going, all right, let's just pretend it never happened. Anyway. There you go. That's all very exciting. We'll no doubt have a big impact on the transfer window over the summer, as will all the managerial movements that are in the works. Today's exciting rumours include Benitez going to Real Madrid and Carlo Ancelotti going to, well, possibly Barcelona. That was one crazy suggestion. Or Milan. That'd be fun. Curious, says Sid Lowe, how many people are reacting to the Benitez to Madrid story by saying Real Madrid won't win the league? Says Sid, he won it twice with Valencia. Valencia. Twice. Yeah. And had in 2 Champions League finals in 3 years with Liverpool, eh? Yeah. Anyway, Benitez, of course, currently engaged with Napoli down in the south of Italy. And this weekend he's got a big game. They're going to be away against Juventus. Napoli are 3 points off the Champions League places in Italy. The 2 teams above them will be meeting each other. That's Roma and Lazio in the Rome derby. Paolo Bandini has booked a trip to Italy this weekend to go and see that game, which is a shame because they won't be playing it this weekend anymore, Paolo.
No, Claudio Lotito has made my life more difficult and more expensive, but I will still be there on Monday for the game, which you know should be a fantastic one. It's set up very nicely now, and I suppose it wouldn't necessarily have made a difference whether Lazio had won last night or not, but the fact that they didn't means that it is now absolutely to validate this great season they've had. They've got to get that Champions League place.
Absolutely. You mentioned the game last night. It was the Coppa Italia final. Excitingly, no one got shot this year. All the fans behaved themselves, and Lazio ended up losing in extra time after coming incredibly close to getting what probably would have been a winner through Djordjevic. They ended up losing 2-1 to Juventus, who are now on a double and looking for that triple in Berlin.
Yeah, and I sort of think everyone's looking ahead to the treble, which is obviously, you know, it would be a huge story. It would be only the second club in Italy ever to win the treble. And I think given all the, you know, the conversations that we know Conte had about it not being possible to achieve these things in Europe with Juventus would be a huge story. But I sort of feel like today we need to pause and acknowledge that actually Juventus winning a double is already a big story. It's only the third time they've done it. They haven't won the Coppa Italia at all since 1995, which is when they last won the double, in fact, under Marcello Lippi. It's their 10th of all time, obviously, as well. La decima, they stole that that language, I guess, from Real Madrid in their pursuit of the 10th Champions League title. And it's, you know, it's a big deal. It's something that again, that Conte wasn't able to achieve with his Juventus team, that indeed, you know, Capello and Ancelotti weren't able to achieve with Juventus when they were there. So I think it's worthy of celebration.
Absolutely. Here's Josep Pacheco saying, the game coming up in Berlin, Juve against Barcelona, similar to the much-fancied Barcelona 94 against Capello's AC Milan. Could it happen again? Asked Jose. What do you think, Paolo?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think, you know, we all look at these historical precedents and try and pull things in. And, you know, there's another line that I've seen and indeed have in my piece for The Guardian on the Cup final, which notes that actually Lippi, of course, when he did last win the double for Juventus that same year, they were in a European final and they lost it. So there's always precedents and comparisons you can draw. And I think that we maybe are better off just looking very very plainly at the two teams that are there. And as good as this Juventus team is, I still think that no one in the world is fully equipped to deal with that attack of Messi, Neymar and Suarez at the moment. So they're going to be the underdogs. I think that's right. They're going to be the underdogs. Having said that, it was interesting that in the Coppa Italia final that they did go with a 3-5-2, which allows them to put Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini all on the pitch at the same time. And that back three is as good a chance, in my opinion, as good a chance as you're going to get yourself of dealing with an attack that good. I think Barzagli, who's sort of the third man in that defence and often has almost been used as an impact sub in the Champions League to come on and shut down games, I think he's one of the finest pure defenders in Europe, honestly, and it's only sort of to do with tactics and injuries that he hasn't been in the team when it's been a four-man back line. So I think that matchup, the idea of a great attack and a great defence is fascinating. But just looking at the teams this year, rather than sort of trying to compare them to anyone from before, I think the favourite still has to be Barcelona.
Although we'll have to see if Barca can deal with Giorgio Chiellini and his amazing goal-scoring acumen.
Well, unfortunately for Chiellini in the Champions League this season has not been as reliable as in past seasons, and maybe more than scoring goals for Juventus, what they need to be concerned about is making sure he doesn't fall over as he has in the last couple of rounds.
Right, OK. Now on to the big story that, of course, broke on Tuesday with 50 arrests, the majority of them down in southern Italy, but people being hauled in by the fuzz all over the peninsula. A series of suspect games and links with the 'Ndrangheta, the Calabrian organised crime, from the 3rd, 4th and 5th division. Paolo, it doesn't feel like we've really finished dealing with the last betting scandal in Italy. Describe in a nutshell this latest one.
No, I mean, unfortunately, it does feel very much like they're just one runs into the other at the moment, and a big part of that is because the Italian judicial system is not especially efficient, and these cases tend to explode, as this one has, in a sort of flurry of newspaper stories and arrests, and then what happens is that they then disappear into the court systems for months and years and end up with far too many people sort of ultimately avoiding punishment because statutes of limitations have expired. It's a huge investigation that's gone on that's led to this, as you say, 50 arrests, this bout of arrests. It's continuing to unravel. They think there's more arrests being made. They're continuing to find, through a variety of different sources, phone interceptions and what they refer to as Pizzini's, little sort of scraps of paper with notes on. They continue to find links to new and different clubs. And most recently, they've linked to a few other clubs, Benevento and Ascoli and Serenitana, are the one getting the most attention because they have just come up from the third division to the second division in Italy, and they are owned by Lazio owner Claudio Lotito, who said that this is all just hearsay and there have been no charges pressed, and he's going to press ahead like a train on the tracks of hard work and success. So a lot of that sort of noise around this at the moment, people saying, well, hey, there's no evidence been presented yet, there's no charges been pushed. And at the higher level, that's true. You know, all the charges, the arrests that have been made relate to lower division clubs. But there is a sense that it's still unraveling and that it could lead to further investigations further up the chain. And you know, what's troubling about it as well is that it all essentially started with an investigation into a particular member of the 'Ndrangheta, which is obviously big organized crime syndicate in the south of Italy. And, the links here, the tie-ups with organized crime are a big part of this investigation, so it's certainly something that is not just relating to the courts of sporting justice, but to the courts of criminal justice as well.
Right, Paolo, magnificent stuff. Enjoy your trip to Rome, however long it ends up being, and we'll catch up with you. We'll catch up with you soon.
Cheers. Speak soon.
Hey, Watford have got Italian owners, Simon.
Yeah.
There you go. A lot of people asking. In fact, we did discuss this before here on the pod, whether Watford's entrance into the moneyed sanctum of the Premier League would mean that the Potters would be diverting their attention to the Hornets from their kind of original Udinese.
Yeah, well, clearly the Premier League is where the money is, but I would expect further cross-pollination. Mm. You know, but if I think that given...
Hornets are good for that, aren't they?
Given...
Oh, hang on, no. Our insect department said Hornets are useless for that. All right. Yeah. Brentford would have been...
Given the state that Watford were in before the Pozzo family arrived,
I'm sorry, I'm just asking our insect department. What do Hornets do? Apparently they're useless.
Aren't they just maxed wasps?
I don't know.
I think they're just wasps that go to the gym a lot.
Really?
I suspect our knowledge of entomology is even worse than our knowledge of promotion and relegation.
Right. Entomology, MLS. Though, eh?
What?
Is that what it's called?
Insects.
Yeah. All right.
I think so. I'll probably be proved wrong by some know-all.
Right. Anyway, Simon, these footballing Hornets, they're not useless, are they?
No, but what I was saying that before you rudely interrupted, given the state that Watford were in when the Pozzos bought them, which was really a very bad way, if the Pozzo family would like to use our money to assist their two other clubs, then they're more than welcome to have some of it.
Right, okay. Well, they brought in an Italian attitude to managerial changes.
Yeah. Still not sure. They're negotiating with Djukanovic, whose contract ended at the end of this season, just finished.
Right, okay.
Those negotiations aren't concluding as rapidly as many would have hoped.
Right, okay.
They're quibbling over wages.
Are you looking forward to the new season? Or are you trepidated?
I've had my fingers burnt on previous visits to the Premier League.
Mm.
If you think about what a good season generally constitutes a good season for a recently promoted side, kind of 40 points, maybe 12 wins, half a dozen draws, and 20 defeats.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of defeats. I prefer a bigger number in the win column.
Right.
I've made no secret of my preference for the Championship over
the Premier League. You prefer being in the Championship?
I don't prefer Watford being in the Championship. I don't simply prefer Watford being in the Championship. I prefer football in the Championship over football in the Premier League.
Oh, I see. Right, okay.
In general. I'm a little bit sad to to be leaving that wonderful division.
Oh, Simon.
As a Southend fan, I will not be sad for Southend to leave the basement if they are fortunate enough to beat Wickham at the weekend.
Right.
I will deem this to be a positive across the board.
Right. Will you be going along into the
game? I will not. I will be going to Newcastle instead.
Oh,
a great
right.
big feature on the fun and frolics up there.
Oh, right.
But there will be, I think, around 25,000 Essex boys in Wembley.
Great.
To whom, obviously, I wish all the best of luck, but I'm not saying anything because I have an appalling hex.
Okay, that's very true. You do, don't you?
Faces in Gant Hill could be hopping even more than usual on Saturday night.
But Wickham are the romantic choice, probably, given that they...
Have you never heard of Phil Brown?
What's not romantic about Southend? Have you ever walked upon the promenade at sunset?
I know, Southend's a beautiful place, and I've got nothing against Phil Brown. He's a good guy. I interviewed him a couple of seasons ago. Just Wickham had to win their last game of last season in order to stay in the Football League, and now here they are on the verge of a romantic following season promotion.
No time for their romance. What could be more romantic than Michael Timlin, whose head was practically turned inside out in the first leg of the playoff semi-finals by a particularly nasty clash, and at the end of the more successful second leg, he ripped off everything that was on his face, his huge bandage and plasters and things held on, even though the Sky Sports reporter in the tunnel was going, no, please don't, please, you don't have to. But he was so desperate to show the battle scarring across his face.
Wow.
That's romance.
Viscera.
That's desire.
Raw.
Blood and flesh and odd stuff.
Wow.
That's what you get up for in the morning.
Right. I'm not sure that's what my wife classes as romance, to be honest.
Wow. Now, there's another playoff game, Barry. And after the passion and drama, what we've just heard, I'm not quite sure how we should begin to approach a Middlesbrough's game with Norwich. That's going on Monday, of course.
I thought you were going to talk about Preston against Swindon.
All right, talk about that instead.
That's romance.
Right.
Worst team in playoff history.
That's true.
9 unsuccessful attempts to get out of them.
Hmm.
Joe Garner, 27 goals this season.
Right.
Jermaine Beckford, he's got, I think, 15 since early December.
Mm-hmm.
Super Kevin Davis.
There you go.
You know, aged 47. Doesn't know yet whether he's going to get a new contract or not. Could come on and score a last-minute winner.
Wow.
And Swindon, I don't really know much about. So I'm rooting for Preston.
Is that more your wife's idea of romance, do you think? Would that be more... Would that get him more hot under the collar?
I'm not sure that ripping apart people's faces in general, I think that generally doesn't qualify.
All right, Preston Swindon it is.
Well, I would say, if is Michael Timlin
yes.
and Kevin Davis did one of those Indiana Jones sort of scar comparisons.
That's Jaws, isn't it?
Jaws, yeah.
What?
You're thinking of the scene where he points to the bits where it hurts, finishing on his lips and kind of ruefully going, here. And then she kisses him, and the boat's horn goes doot.
Who compares scars then?
Not Broly, it's Quinn.
Oh no,
Quinn,
sorry.
It's Quinn and the what's the name?
No,
of
I'm thinking
Miriam Biologist.
It's Lethal Weapon.
Oh,
for Mel Gibson and
well, there goes the name.
His love interest, Rene Russo,
right,
are comparing battle scars.
Are they?
And I think if Michael Timlin and Kevin Davis did that, Kevin Davis would win by a streak.
I don't know. Timlin's face was basically inside out.
Yeah.
It was a real raggedy. It wasn't like a straight gash.
Was it like another film, Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2? You remember when it gets all off?
Yeah.
Anyway, playoff final. Middlesbrough. Ooh, we were talking about this with, of course, young Paul McInnes the other day, how his team have been soundly beaten by Middlesbrough on their recent encounters. But they did finish a point higher than Middlesbrough in the table. And, who's better equipped to go up, do you think? Simon, you'll have seen them in action this season.
Yeah, they're two really strong teams. Middlesbrough's defence has been the kind of feature of their season. Norwich have essentially had two seasons with two different managers. And since January, they've been... And extraordinarily good. And in fact, and over that period, over the last 4 or 5 months, they've been much better than Middlesbrough.
Right.
So that's perhaps levelled out a bit over the very tail end of the season when Middlesbrough obviously beat Norwich. But I suppose on that basis, Norwich would have to be favourites, and the bookmakers are favouring them. And also, Middlesbrough have a couple of injury question marks. Mm. Bamford's not been training this week, their top scorer. So that would be a significant issue if he is playing despite not being fully fit.
Right.
And he injured himself at Carrow Road, so Norwich may have done themselves a favour in that game, even while losing it. Now, it was an interesting game, that one, and I guess encouraging in different ways for both teams. Obviously, Middlesbrough won it. They scored an early goal and then defended for their lives. Norwich had very much the better of the match after that. Didn't create a huge amount, missed one great chance. But I guess that, you know, that I think it was 4-0 at the Riverside. That's ancient history now. That's in that was in October, November.
Right.
We can forget about that.
We'll forget about that. Mm. Who would be the romantic... Actually, it's probably with Norwich, best not to talk about romance and stuff, but who would be the romantic choice in this game, do you think? Ian?
I don't know. Who's romantic? I like both clubs. I'm more intrigued by the fact that in the style of Sir Alex Ferguson, Jose Mourinho will be building up this little cartel of his former lieutenants in the Premier League with Karanka, if Middlesbrough go up, Brendan Rodgers there as well, obviously his former youth coach, and of course his beautiful friendship with Tony Pulis.
Absolutely.
Norwich were in the Premier League a year ago, and there's nothing enormously romantic about clubs getting relegated and coming straight back up again.
That's a fair point. But on the other hand,
loose of romance today, aren't we?
Indeed.
Hmm.
Our lucky wives.
Indeed. All right, well, just time to say that Leeds have signed Uwe Rosler as their fifth manager in the past 12 months. He promises attack-minded, it says here, in brackets, in inverted commas, heavy metal football. Mm. So that's nice.
And
he's a nice chap, isn't he, Uwe?
Seems to be.
He's a very nice chap.
He signed a 2-year contract, which, in the context of Leeds United managers, it just sounds a bit funny. He should have just signed a 4-month contract.
Well, no, because this way he'll get paid for 2 years.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
It's good timing, though, because he probably can't get sacked over the summer, you would think.
I don't know.
I mean, wouldn't rule it out at Leeds, but at least this way he gets, you know, 3 months on the CV.
Yeah, he'll be there the longest over.
I have a feeling that Chiellino has sacked somebody during the summer before. Yeah, the guy who got them, and I can't remember his name, at Cagliari. He received a phone call about 2 days before the season started, and it was Chiellino saying, "You're out, chum." So I think there's every chance that he could be sacked over the summer.
Yeah. Okay.
Although the club, of course, is no longer run by Chiellino because of that ban. Isn't that right? I'm confused. Is his daughter or something? Boy, we've got a lot of reading to do this summer.
And in Scotland.
Yes.
Rangers had 2 good results this week.
Oh, right. Football corner.
Yeah, football corner. They beat Hibs 2-0 in the first leg of their playoff to see who gets into a playoff against Motherwell to get into the Scottish Premiership. And Dave King, the South African businessman who was found guilty of 41 counts of fraud and tax evasion and had to pay £40 million to the South African Exchequer and a fine of £300,000 or face 2 years in jail after being found guilty of criminal charges, and who was helping to run Rangers when they went into an administration, has been found fit and proper to run a football club by the SFA. So this convicted criminal and fraudster will be able to proceed with his plan to pump in loads of money.
Right, and what cavil or technicality were they able to pass him, despite the fact that he's convicted of financial crimes?
I don't know. Okay. The Scottish Football Association moves in very mysterious ways.
All right. Then.
But a South African High Court judge once referred to Dave King as a glib and shameless liar.
Well, on that note, we come to the end of today's show. We're not going to be back on Monday because of the romance of the playoffs and all that. We'll be doing our show on Tuesday. So many thanks to everyone, by the way, who bought tickets to the Manchester show. They're all gone now.
They're
all gone. Wow. We'll be back on Tuesday. Thanks, Simon. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Barry. Thanks, producer Ben. Thank you, listener. Have a super weekend.
Guardian listeners get the latest news, but they can also create it
With our sponsor Squarespace, you can easily create an elegant website for your personal brand, online store, business, personal portfolio, or blog. Whoever you are, Squarespace's simple tools and elegant designs make your ideas newsworthy and accessible to any audience. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.